deny the love are hanging on me, push and shove. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real compared to what.
Whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I'm willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. Patrick Henry. Good afternoon, good evening. Jeffrey Bennett here. Wow. What we did on the air yesterday was quite interesting. The phone calls that the network received, the emails, the texts that I received thanking me for doing that two-hour set of the Eagles yesterday was kind of a mind-blower to me. A lot of reasons for it. I had my accountant, my legal advisor in from New York for several days, very time-consumptive with what we had to work on. And I got him on the airplane at 5:30 this afternoon to get him back out of town. But it made things very difficult, so we chose to run the two-hour rebroadcast of a program I had done back in 2010, the Eagles. Glad that you enjoyed it. I began working on tonight's program a number of hours ago, and had the first hour completely set up and ready to go. Second hour, we'll be concentrating on health-related issues, and in a roundabout way, we'll be concentrating and talking about it during this first hour tonight as well. But I'm going through some old archives of mine, things that I published so many years ago. I came across a piece that I realized had to be shared, and it will be the title of the first hour of tonight's program, The Doors of Perception, Why Americans Will Believe Almost Anything. Aldous Huxley's inspired 1956 essay detailed the vivid, mind-expanding, multi-sensory insights of his mescaline adventures. And by altering his brain chemistry with natural psychotropics, Huxley tapped into a rich and fluid world of shimmering, indescribable beauty and power. And with his neurosensory input thus triggered, Huxley was able to enter that parallel universe described by every mystic and space captain in recorded history. What's all this got to do with health, Bennett? Stick around, baby. Whether by hallucination or epiphany, Huxley sought to remove all controls, all filters, all cultural conditioning from his perceptions and to confront nature or the world or reality firsthand in its unpasteurized, unedited, unretouched, infinite rawness. And those bonds are much harder to break today. 75 years later. We're the most conditioned programmed beings the world has ever known, my friends. Not only are our thoughts and attitudes continually being shaped and molded, our very awareness of the whole design seems like it's being subtly and inexorably erased. The doors of our perception are carefully and precisely regulated. Who cares, right? It's an exhausting and endless task to keep explaining to people how most issues of conventional wisdom are scientifically implanted in the public consciousness by 1,000 media clips per day. And in an effort to save time, though, we're going to try to provide just a little background on the handling of information in this country. And once the basic principles are illustrated about how our current system of media control arose historically, then the listener might be more apt to question any given popular opinion. You see, if everybody believes something, it's probably wrong. We call it conventional wisdom. In America, conventional wisdom that has mass acceptance is usually contrived. Someone paid for it. Oh, let me share with you a few examples. That pharmaceuticals restore health. Vaccination brings immunity. And the cure for cancer is just around the corner. Well, the problem is it's here. It's just that big pharma and big meds don't want to, you know, pay attention to the truth. That's a story for, well, maybe the second hour. Menopause is a disease condition. When a child is sick, he needs immediate antibiotics. When a child has a fever, he needs Tylenol. Hospitals are safe and clean. America has the best health care in the world. Americans have the best health in the world. Milk is a good source of calcium. You never outgrow your need for milk. Vitamin C is ascorbic acid. Aspirin prevents heart attacks. Heart drugs improve the heart. Back and neck pain are the only reasons for spinal adjustment. No child can get into school without being vaccinated. The FDA thoroughly tests all drugs before they go on the market. Yeah, right. Pregnancy is a serious medical condition. Chemotherapy and radiation are effective cures for cancer. You know, we know better than that. When your child is diagnosed with an ear infection, antibiotics should be given immediately, just in case. Ear tubes are for the good of the child. Estrogen drugs prevent osteoporosis after menopause. Pediatricians are the most highly trained of all medical specialists. And the purpose of the healthcare industry is, after all, it's health. HIV is the cause of AIDS. AZT is the cure. Without vaccinations, infectious diseases will return. Fluoride in the city water protects your teeth. Flu shots prevent the flu. Vaccines are thoroughly tested before being placed on the mandated schedule. Yeah, well, we know better than that. Right, Fauci? Doctors are certain that the benefits of vaccines far outweigh any possible risks. There's a power shortage in California. There's a meningitis epidemic in California, and the NASDAQ is a natural market controlled only by supply and demand. Oh, but chronic pain is a natural consequence of aging. Soy is the healthiest source of protein. Insulin shots cure diabetes. After we take out your gallbladder, you can eat anything you want. Allergy medicines will cure allergies. My friends, what I've just shared with you is merely a list of illusions, which have cost billions and billions of dollars to conjure up. Did you ever wonder why you never see the president speaking publicly unless he's reading? Well, maybe with the exception of Biden. Or why most people in this country think generally the same about most of the above issues? It's a con job. But here is how this entire mess got started. In trust, we're experts. Stauber and Rampton pulled together some compelling data describing the science of creating public opinion in America. They traced modern public influence back to the early part of the last century, highlighting the work of guys like Edward L. Bernays, the father of spin. He's not the uncle of Marty. Spin and Marty? All right, you get my drift. From his own amazing chronicle, Propaganda, we learned how Bernays took the ideas of his famous uncle Sigmund Freud himself and applied them to the emerging science of mass persuasion. The only difference was that instead of using these principles to uncover hidden themes in the human unconsciousness, the way Freudian psychology did, Bernays used the same ideas to mask agendas and to create illusions that deceived and misrepresent, all for marketing purposes. So Bernays dominated the PR, the public relations industry, until the 1940s. He was a significant force for another 40 years after that. And during all that time, Bernays took on hundreds of diverse assignments to create a public perception about some idea or product. A few examples. As a neophyte with the Committee on Public Information, one of Bernays' first assignments was to help sell the First World War to the American public with the idea to make the world safe for democracy. A few years later, Bernays set up a stunt to popularize the notion of women smoking cigarettes. And so in organizing the 1929 Easter Parade in New York City, Bernays showed himself as a force to be reckoned with. He organized the Torches of Liberty Brigade, in which suffragettes marched in the parade smoking cigarettes as a mark of women's liberation. Oh, such publicity followed from that one event that from then on, women have felt secure about destroying their own lungs in public, the same way that men had always done. Oh, and Bernays popularized the idea of bacon for breakfast. Oh, no, not one to turn down a challenge. He set up the advertising format along with the AMA that lasted for over 50 years, proving that cigarettes were beneficial to health. Just look at the ads. Issues of Life or Time, the 1940s and 50s. And during the next several decades, Bernays and his colleagues evolved the principles by which masses of people could be generally swayed through messages repeated over and over hundreds of times. One of the values of media became apparent. Other countries of the world tried to follow our lead, but Bernays, he really was the gold standard. Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's minister of propaganda. Oh, he studied the principles of Bernays. When Goebbels was developing the popular rationale he would use to convince the Germans that they had to purify their race. And we face smoke and mirrors. And Bernays' job was to reframe an issue, to create a desired image that would put a particular product or concept in it. Desirable light. Bernays described the public as a herd that needed to be led, and this herd-like thinking made people susceptible to leadership. Bernays never deviated from his fundamental axiom to control the masses without their knowing it. The best PR happens with the people unaware that they're being, well, the word is manipulated, but maybe the proper word is conned. Stauber described Bernays' rationale like this. He said, the scientific manipulation of public opinion was necessary to overcome chaos and conflict in a democratic society. These early mass persuaders postured themselves as performing a moral service for humanity in general. Democracy was just too good for people. They needed to be told what to think because they were incapable of rationale thought by themselves. Let me share a paragraph with you from Bernays' publication, Propaganda. He said, those who manipulate the unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed. Our minds molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of. This is a logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organized. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society. in almost every act of our lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business and our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires to control the public mind. Allow me to interject. That last statement, in almost every act of our lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires that control the public mind. And we've seen this more and more and more these past few decades to the point of ad nauseum. Welcome to the vomitory. Well, all this is somewhat of a tad different from Thomas Jefferson's view on the subject. Jefferson stated, "I know of no safe depository of the ultimate power of the society, but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise that control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion." Inform their discretion. Bernays believed that only a few possessed and only a few possessed the necessary insight into the big picture to be entrusted with this sacred task. And luckily, he saw himself as one of that few. Bernays? Well, then it all became, "Here comes the money. Here comes the money. Da 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 da." You see, once the possibilities of applying Freudian psychology to mass media were glimpsed, Bernays soon had more corporate clients than he could handle. Global corporations fell all over themselves courting the new image makers. There were dozens of goods and services and ideas to be sold to a susceptible public. Today we might use the term dumbed down public. Over the years, the players have had the money to make their images happen. Some of those companies would be Boeing, Philip Morris, Pfizer. Pfizer, oh God. Union Carbide, Allstate, Monsanto, Eli Lilly, the entirety of the tobacco industry. Company called Ciba Geigy. It was the lead industry and Coors and DuPont and Clorox. Shell Oil, Standard Oil, Procter & Gamble, General Motors, Dow Chemical, General Mills, Goodyear. It goes on and on and on. We could add another 200 companies to that list. And who are some of the players? PR firms, many of whom I'm sure are long since gone. PR firms that emerged to answer that demand, and among them were companies like Burson Marsteller, Edelman, Hill & Knowlton, Kammerzinger, Ketchum. That's K-E-T-C-H-U-M. And I guess because of their abilities, they caught all of us. You know, Ketchum. The company called Mangoven, Bosco, and Dushin. Oh, Bisco, not Bosco. That's chocolate stuff, you know. A company called BSMG, another one called Butterfin. World famous representatives within the PR industry. Names that we don't know, never did know, for good reason. The best PR always goes unnoticed. And for decades, They had created the opinions that most of us were raised on virtually any issue which has the remotest commercial value, including pharmaceutical drugs, vaccines, medicine as a profession, alternative medicine, fluoridation of city water, chlorine, household cleaning products, tobacco, dioxin, global warming, leaded gasoline, cancer research and treatment, pollution of the oceans, forests, lumber, images of celebrities, including damage control. Don't forget crisis and disaster management, genetically modified foods, aspartame, food additives, processed foods, dental amalgams. Bernays learned early on that the most effective way to create credibility for a product or an image was by independent third-party endorsement. For example, if General Motors were to come out and say that global warming is a hoax thought up by some liberal tree huggers, people would suspect GM's motives, since GM's fortune, of course, is made by selling automobiles. If, however, some independent research institute with a very credible-sounding name like the Global Climate Coalition came out with a scientific report that says global warming is really a fiction, people would begin to become confused. They would have doubts about the original issue. But you see, that's exactly what Bernays did. With a policy inspired by genius, he set up more institutes and foundations than Rockefeller and Carnegie combined. It was all quietly financed by the industries whose products were being evaluated. And these independent research agencies would churn out so-called scientific studies and press materials that could create any image their handlers wanted. And such front groups are given high-sounding names like Temperature Research Foundation, the International Food Information System, Consumer Alert, the Advancement of Sound Science Coalition, Air Hygiene Foundation, Industrial Health Federation, International Food Information Council, the Manhattan Institute, Center for Produce Quality, Tobacco Institute Research Council, Cato Institute, American Council on Science and Health, Global Climate Coalition, and let's, of course, not forget the Alliance for Better Foods. I mean, come on, be honest. All those names sound pretty legit, don't they? Oh. As was explained, and I think understood by most of us, these organizations and hundreds of others like them are nothing more than front groups whose sole mission is to advance the image of the global corporations who fund them. Like some of those we listed above previously to this. This is accomplished in part by an endless stream of press releases announcing breakthrough research to every radio station and newspaper in the country. Now, many of these canned reports, they all read like straight news. They're indeed purposely molded in the news format, which saves journalists the trouble of researching the subjects on their own, especially on topics which they know very little. Entire sections of the release, or in the case of video news releases, the entire thing could be just lifted intact with no editing. Given the byline of the reporter or newspaper or television station, and voila! Instant news! Copy, paste, written by corporate PR firms. Does all of this really happen, Bennett? Every single day since the 1920s, over 100 years ago, when the idea of the news release was first invented by Ivy Lee. That was their name, Sometimes as many as half the stories appearing in an issue of the Wall Street Journal are based solely on such PR press releases. And these types of stories are mixed right in with legitimately researched stories. And so unless you've done the research yourself, you won't be able to tell the difference now, will you? Now let's talk a little bit about the language of spin. We're not trying to confuse with Spin and Marty. Now that's a different story. That's my sense of humor. As 1920s spin pioneers like Ivy Lee and Bernays gained more experience, they began to formulate rules and guidelines for creating public opinion. They learned quickly that mob psychology must focus on emotion, not facts. But since the mob isn't capable of rational thought, the mob is you and I, effectively. Motivation must be based not on logic, but on presentation. Some of the axioms of the new science of PR, public relations. The technology is a religion unto itself. And that if people are incapable of rational thought, real democracy is dangerous. Or important decisions should be left to experts. When reframing issues, stay away from substance. Create images. And never state a clearly demonstrable lie. You know, words are very carefully chosen for their emotional impact. Examples, a front group called the International Food Information Council handle the public's natural aversion to genetically modified foods. Trigger words were repeated all through their texts, and now in the case of GM foods, that's genetically modified, the public is instinctively afraid of these experimental new creations which have suddenly popped up on our grocery shelves, which are said to have DNA alterations. The IFIC, the IFIC, wants to reassure the public of the safety of GM foods, so it avoids words like Frankenfoods or Hitler, biotech, chemical, DNA. Oh, don't use the words experiments or manipulate. Ooh, 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 but don't talk about money. They don't want to talk about safety or scientists or radiation or roulette or gene splicing or gene gun or random. No, instead, good PR for GM foods contains words like hybrids, natural order, beauty, choice, bounty, crossbreeding, ooh, look out for that one, diversity, earth, farmer, organic, and wholesome. All of this is basic Freudian Tony Robbins word association. The fact that GM foods are not hybrids that have been subjected to the slow and careful scientific methods of real crossbreedings, it doesn't really matter. It's pseudoscience. It's not science. Form everything, and substance, just a passing myth. Who do you think funds the International Food Information Council? Take a wild guess. Yeah, Monsanto, DuPont, Frito-Lay, Coca-Cola, NutraSweet, and all of those in position to make fortunes from GM foods. Uh-huh. GM foods, genetically modified foods. Do you begin to understand all of the insanity of this? Yes, there's a wide range of intermixing stuff. But Bennett, this is Wednesday. You're supposed to be doing health shows. To me, this has got a tremendous amount to our health, certainly. It makes much reference to things within the health fields that we attempt to discuss on Wednesdays. But in a roundabout backdoor way, what this is doing is discussing mental health. No, that's not the way the article was written. But that's what I see. That's what I smell. Well, I'm not knocking the article. Our mental health has been bastardized. It's been screwed around with. So let's take a side effect. Let's talk about propaganda. Now, these are the characteristics of good propaganda I'm sharing with you, of course. As the science of mass control evolved, public relations firms developed further guidelines for effective copy or con games. Here's some of the examples. Dehumanize the attack party by labeling and name-calling. Speak in glittering generalities using emotionally positive words. When covering something up, don't use plain English. Stall for time. Distract. In other words, jerk our minds around a bit. Let's get endorsements from celebrities, churches, sports figures, street people, anyone who has no expertise in the subject at hand. You know, that's interesting. I think about what I've witnessed over the last 30-odd years when I've got maybe one of the news stations on, which I don't even watch anymore. My wife does. But every once in a while, one of these gold companies comes up. And oh, yeah, contact us. Oh, American Eagle, this, that, and the other thing. And they'll get you conned in. And, of course, then they want to move you into high-priced rare coins. But the problem is they've almost always got some personality involved. Advertiser. No, we're not going to have time for that today. I got no time to dance with Kim. Maybe the next hour. We'll see. But it's amazing how many Hollywood personalities will get sucked into being the mouthpiece for these so-called rare coin dealers. Yeah, get endorsements from celebrities. How about some of the other good propaganda characteristics? The plain folks ruse. Plain folks ruse. Us billionaires just like you. When minimizing outrage, don't say anything memorable. When minimizing outrage, point out the benefits of just what happened. When minimizing outrage, don't ever discuss moral issues. You begin to think about these kind of things. You begin to watch for these techniques. If you're watching television, in many respects, when you're listening to things on the radio, none of these things are hard to find. You can look at today's paper, tonight's television news, see what some of these broadcasters are doing. Oh, these guys are good. And then we deal with the science for hire mentality. PR firms have become very sophisticated in the preparation of news releases. They've learned how to attach the names of famous scientists to research that those scientists have not even looked at. This is a common occurrence. And in this way, the editors of newspapers and television news shows are often not even aware that an individual release is a total public relations fabrication. Or at least they have deniability. Right? We hear the story of how leaded gas came into the picture. 1992, General Motors discovered that adding lead to gasoline gave cars more horsepower. Well, when there was some concern about safety, then General Motors paid the Bureau of Mines to do some fake testing, published spurious research that proved that inhalation of lead was harmless. Enter one Charles Kettering, founder of the world-famous Sloan Kettering Memorial Institute for Medical Research. Kettering also happened to be an executive with General Motors. And by some strange coincidence, we soon have the Sloan Kettering Institute issuing reports stating that lead occurs naturally in the body and that the body has a way of eliminating low-level exposure. And through its association with the Industrial Hygiene Foundation and the PR giant Hill & Knowlton, Sloan Kettering opposed all anti-lead research for years. And without organized scientific opposition for the next 60-plus years, more and more gasoline became leaded. Until by the 1970s, 90% of our gasoline was leaded. But finally, it became too obvious to hide that lead was a major carcinogen, and leaded gas was phased out in the late 1980s. But during that 60 years, it is estimated that some 30 million tons of lead were released in vapor form into American streets and highways. 30 million tons. That is PR, my friends. Public relations. Now, in 1993, a guy named Peter Huber wrote a new book, coined a new term. The book was entitled Galileo's Revenge. The term was junk science. And Huber's shallow thesis was that real science supports technology, industry, and progress. Anything else was suddenly junk science. Not surprisingly, Stober explained how Huber's book was supported by the industry-backed Manhattan Institute. Huber's book was generally dismissed, not only because it was so poorly written, but because it failed to realize one simple fact, that true scientific research begins with no conclusions. Real scientists are seeking the truth because they do not yet know what the truth is. True scientific method goes like this. Form a hypothesis. Make predictions for that hypothesis. Test the predictions. And then reject or revise the hypotheses based on the research findings. So Boston University scientist Dr. David Ozenoff explained that ideas in science were themselves like living organisms that must be nourished, supported, cultivated with resources for making them grow and flourish. Great ideas that don't get this financial support because the commercial angles are not immediately obvious. Those ideas wither, they die. But another way we can often distinguish real science from phony science is that real science points out flaws in its own research. Phony science pretends that there were no flaws. And so then we approach and have to look at real junk science. Contrast all of this with modern PR and its constant pretensions to sound science. Corporate-sponsored research, whether it's in the area of drugs, GM foods, that's not General Motors, that's... God. That's how they confuse people. What about chemistry? Chemistry begins with predetermined conclusions. All of this becomes the jobs of the scientists then to prove that these conclusions are true. Because of the economic upside that proof will bring to the industries paying for that research. And those invidious approach to science has shifted the entire focus of research in America during the past 70-plus odd years, as any true scientist is likely to admit. It has been documented the increasing amount of corporate sponsorship of university research has nothing to do with the pursuit of knowledge. Scientists lament that research has become just another commodity, something bought and sold. You know, it becomes shocking when Stauber shows how the vast majority of corporate public relations today opposes any research that seeks to protect public health and or the environment. It's a funny thing that most of the time when we see the phrase junk science, it is in a context of defending something that may threaten either the environment or our health. It all makes sense when one realizes that money changes hands only by selling the illusion of health and the illusion of environmental protection. And true environmental protection certainly is going to have an effect on our health. True public health and real preservation of the Earth's environment have very low market value. And so it is thought ironic that industry's self-proclaimed debunkers of junk science are usually non-scientists themselves. Here again, they can do this because the issue is not science, but the creation of images. When PR firms attack legitimate environmental groups and alternative medicine people, they again use special words which will carry an emotional punch. Words like outraged, sound science, junk science, sensible, scaremongering, responsible, phobia, hoax, alarmist hysteria. The next time you might be reading a newspaper or magazine article about an environmental or a health issue, carefully note how the author shows bias by using any of those above terms. Those terms we just shared with you. All of that is the result of very specialized training. Another standard PR tactic is to use the rhetoric of the environmentalists themselves to defend a dangerous and untested product that poses an actual threat to the environment. This we see constantly in the PR smokescreen that surrounds genetically modified foods. They talk about how GM foods are necessary to grow more food and to end world hunger, when the reality is that GM foods actually have lower yields per acre than natural crops. The grand design sort of comes into focus once you realize that almost all GM foods have been created by the sellers of herbicides and pesticides so that those plants can withstand greater amounts of herbicides and pesticides. Interestingly enough, that particular paragraph I've just shared with you came from a publication called The Magic Bean. Publisher Parrish. That's the classic dilemma of every research scientist. That means whoever expects funding for the next research project had better get the current research paper published in the best scientific journals. And we all know that the best scientific journals like JAMA and New England Journal and British Medical Journal, etc., ad nauseum, they're all peer-reviewed, of course. A peer review means that any articles which actually get published. Between all those full-colored drug ads and pharmaceutical centerfolds, when they've all been reviewed and accepted by some really smart guys with a lot of credentials. The assumption, of course, is that if the article made it past peer review, the data and conclusions of the research study have been thoroughly checked out and bear some resemblance to physical reality. Now, my friends, there's a few problems with this hot little setup. First of all, money. Even though prestigious, venerable medical journals pretend to be so objective and scientific and incorruptible, the reality is that they face the same type of being called to account that all glossy magazines must confront. Don't antagonize your advertisers. Those full-page drug ads in the best journals cost millions. Check. How long will the pharmaceutical pay for ad space in a magazine that prints some very sound scientific research paper that attacks the safety of the drug in the centerfold? Think about it. The editors ain't that stupid. It's all about money. Dinero. You got it? Another problem is the conflict of interest business, you know. There's a formal requirement for all medical journals that any financial ties between an author and a product manufacturer be disclosed in the article. In practice, it never happens. A study done in 1997 of 142 medical journals did not find even one such disclosure. 1997. That's 2 years after I began broadcasting. A 1998 study from the New England Journal of Medicine found that 96% of peer-reviewed articles had financial ties to the drug they were studying. Big shock, huh? Any disclosures? Yeah, right. That study should be pointed out whenever somebody starts getting too pompous about the objectivity of peer review, like they often do. Of course, then there's the outright purchase of the space, you know, a drug company may simply pay $100,000 to a journal to have a favorable article printed. Fraud in peer-reviewed journals is nothing new. No, 1987, the New England Journal ran an article that followed the research of one R. Slutsky, MD, over a 7-year period. During that time, Dr. Slutsky had published 137 articles in a number of peer-reviewed journals. Well, New England Journal of Medicine found that in at least 60 of those 137, there was evidence of major scientific fraud and misrepresentation, including reporting data for experiments that were never done, reporting measurements that were never made, and reporting statistical analysis that were never done. Dean Black, PhD, described what he called the Babel effect, which results when this very common and frequently undetected scientific fraudulent data in peer-reviewed journals are quoted by other researchers, who are in turn requoted by still others, and so on and so forth. You want to see or read something that sort of reframes this whole discussion? Back in the early 2000s, you could check out the McDonald's ads, which often appear in the Journal of American Medical Association. And then keep in mind, it's the same publication that for almost 50 years ran cigarette ads proclaiming the health benefits of tobacco. Oh, baby, it's all scientific as hell, huh? And then how about this one? Kill your television. I mean, this is something that I just don't watch anymore. Yeah, there's one station that I watch, and maybe two. I'll watch old Western movies, or I watch Ion. And then all these commercials come on with drugs and medicines and alternative this, that, and the other thing, and they all got homos slapping and kissing each other in the whole nine yards. But kill the TV. Maybe all that we've shared with you just this far gives you a hint to start reading newspaper and magazine articles a little bit differently. Perhaps start watching television news shows with a slightly different attitude than you had before. You must always ask, what are they selling here? Who's selling it? And if you actually follow up on Stauber and Rampton's book, check out some of the other resources that we've shared with you during this hour. You might even glimpse the possibility of advancing your life one quantum simply by ceasing to subject your brain to this bullshit. That's right. No more newspapers, no more television news, no more Time Magazine or Newsweek. You could actually do that. I mean, just think about what you could do with the extra time alone. Really feel like you need to relax or find out what's going on in the world for a few hours every day? Think about the news of the past few decades for a minute. You really suppose that major stories that have dominated headlines and television news have been about what's going on in the world? You actually think there's been nothing going on besides the contrived tech stump, the contrived power shortages, the refiltered accounts of foreign violence and disaster, and all the other non-stories that the puppeteers dangle before us each and every day? What about the days gone by when they get a big one with O.J. or Monica Lewinsky or the Oklahoma City bombing? So many of us have been around through all of that. Do we really need to know all the detail day after day after day? I mean, Monica Lewinsky was only trying to blow her horn. Do we have any way of verifying all of these details, even if we wanted to? What's the purpose of news? Is it to inform the public? Hardly. The sole purpose of news is to keep the public in a state of fear and uncertainty so that we will watch again tomorrow be subjected to the same advertising. Is it oversimplification? Of course it is, because that's the mark of mass media mastery, simplicity, the invisible hand. Like Edward Bernays said, the people must be controlled without them knowing it. Consider this. What was really going on in the world at the time that they were distracting us with all that stupid, vexatious daily smokescreen? Fear and uncertainty. That's what keeps people coming back for more. It seems like a radical outlook, but let's take a look at one step further. What would you lose from your life if you stopped watching television and stopped reading newspapers altogether? Would your life really suffer any financial, moral, intellectual, literary, or spiritual or academic loss from such a decision? Do you really need to have your family continually absorbing the illiterate, immoral, phony, uncultivated, desperately brainless values of the people featured in the average nightly television program? Are these fake program robots, are they even normal? Do we need to have our life values constantly spoon-fed to us? Are these shows amusing or just necessary distraction to keep us from looking at reality or trying to figure things out ourselves by doing a little independent reading or studying? Name one example of how your life is improved by watching television news or reading the evening paper or tuning into RBN. What measurable gains have they been for all of us? My friends, there is no question that as a nation we're getting dumber year by year. Look at the presidents we've been choosing. Ever notice the blatant grammar mistakes so ubiquitous in today's advertising and billboards? Literacy is marginal in most American secondary schools. 3/4 of California high school seniors cannot even read well enough to pass their exit exams. And if you think other parts of the country are smarter, try this one on. Hand any high school senior a book by Dumas or Austen, Jane Austen. Ask them to open to any random page and just read one paragraph out loud. Go ahead, do it. SAT scales are arbitrarily shifted lower and lower to disguise how dumb our children are becoming year by year. At least 10% or more have documented learning disabilities, which are reinforced and rewarded by special treatment and special drugs. ADD, ADHD, Ritalin, Prozac, amen. Maybe we should observe the intellectual level of the average movie, which these days may only last 1 or 2 weeks in the theaters, especially if it has insufficient explosions, chase scenes, silicone, fake martial arts, cretinesque dialogue. Radio? Consider the low mental qualifications of the falsely animated corporate remains hired as DJs. Seems like they're only allowed to have 50 thoughts, which they just repeat at random. And at what point did popular music cease to require the study of any musical instrument or theory whatsoever, not to mention lyric? Perhaps we just don't understand this emerging art form, right? Oh, there's the Darwinism of MTV. Apes descended from man. Ever notice how most articles in any glossy magazine sound they were all written by the same guy? And the writer just graduated from junior college? And yet has all the correct opinions on social issues, no original ideas. And that shallow, smug, homogenized corporate omniscience to assure us that everything is going to be fine. Yes, everything is fine, baby. All of this is great news for the PR industry, right? Makes their job a lot easier. Not only are very few paying attention to the process of conditioning, few are capable of understanding it, or even somebody explained it to them. Let's say you're in a crowded cafeteria. You buy a cup of tea. You're about to sit down. You see your friend way across the room, so you put the tea down, walk across the room to talk to your friend for a few minutes. Now, coming back to your tea, you're just going to pick it up and drink it. Remember, this is a crowded place. You've just left your tea unattended for several minutes. You've given somebody in that room access to your tea. Why should your mind be any different? Turning on the television or uncritically absorbing mass publications each and every day, these activities allow access to our minds by anyone. Anyone who has an agenda, anyone with the resources to create a public image via popular media. Just because we've read something or seen something on television doesn't mean that it's true or worth knowing. The idea is, like the tea, the mind is also worth guarding, worth limiting access to it. My friends, this is the only life we've got. time is our total capital. Why waste it allowing our potential, our personality, our values to be shaped, crafted, and limited according to the whims of the mass panderists? There are many truly important decisions that are crucial to our physical, our mental, our spiritual well-being. Decisions which require information and resource and research. If it's an issue where money is involved, objective data won't be so easy to obtain. Remember that if everyone knows something, that image has been bought and paid for. Real knowledge, my friends, takes a little effort, a little excavation down at least one level below what everyone knows. Stay with us. We'll be back for the second hour.
If we're not very careful, life can overwork us. So take today and make it gay, for there are too many tears along the way. So come to the circus, it's circus day today. Come see the barkers and the gawkers, the bareback riders and the fearless tightrope walkers. The funny bears do their routine.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.